Welcome to Fabulous After 50, the podcast for women wanting to make the most of their lives. My name is Julie Kennedy, and I am your host. Lucky us to have Petra Will, an acupuncture specialist, holistic coach, and massage therapist, back with us here today to plunge again into the mysterious world of Chinese traditional medicine, of qi. I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing it properly, but Petra will correct me. Qi. Okay. To understand how emotions connect to organs and what we can do to ensure our life force flows optimally.
Yeah.
Welcome, Petra. Can you
Thank you.
Let us know, for those who didn't hear our last fantastic episode on what the heck is acupuncture, tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Well, yeah, so I'm an acupuncturist. I've done many, many different things in my life. I suppose at the end of the day, all sort of led to where I'm now. I've always had an interest in nutrition and healthcare and holistic thinking. But due to basically wanting to have a third child around the age of 38, which didn't go immediately. And so after 8 months of trying, I decided acupuncture, because I'd read somewhere that that helps with fertility. That's how I started acupuncture. That's how I was introduced to acupuncture. And that really made such a big impact on me, because I literally felt such a movement of sorts of things throughout my body while the needles were being inserted. And while I was lying on the table, I was like really sort of dumbstruck with all the sensations and just thinking, gosh, how is it possible for some small needles to kind of just have such a big impact? And also like emotions actually started flow, like came up. I see that sometimes in a treatment also, where people have a spontaneous sort of, you know, will cry maybe a bit, or right. So it's very interesting sort of how that works on the body. So I just was really intrigued by it. And that's when I started reading about it, and I started going back to school to actually become an acupuncturist. That's how I started doing this, and I'm still doing it. And I really like it because, well, yeah, acupuncture is very intriguing, and there's a lot written about it, but there's a lot of unknowns. But basically what happens is that, well, yeah, so you insert the needles and the body kind of thinks, what's this, what's happening, these are little foreign invaders, let's go and check it out. And for the body to check out what's going on, it really collaborates with all the different body systems, organ systems. And we have 12 official organ systems, maybe 13 now. You know, think of the cardiovascular system, think of your immune system, think of your digestive system, you name it. These are very complicated systems that work very closely together as like a very complicated orchestra. So they all kind of sort of get in touch with each other. And so let's say we put the needles in, the heart rate will go up a little bit because it has to be more blood flow going to the area, because like I said, there's a foreign invader. We don't know what it is. It could be toxic, could be poisonous. We don't know. So there's lots of macrophages, lots of anti-immunity or immunity cells, lots and lots of body chemicals going through the blood, being released by the brain immediately to tackle whatever it needs to be doing.
All of that
there.
In response to the little piercing just that you can barely feel.
Absolutely. What? There would be like hundreds of body chemicals being released. And some of them are extremely powerful painkillers. Some of them are even more powerful than morphine. So you already get like, this is one of the reasons, for instance, you know, it helps with pain relief. Yes, because we, you know, the body releases very strong painkillers, natural painkillers. It releases oxytocin, maybe you've heard of the, you know, this particular hormone that is called the love hormone. That's very relaxing. It releases serotonin. So just to name a few, those are some big names, but it releases many, many other body.
You're basically sending in like a whole army. You're basically
sending
the army to this point where the needle's just been.
Yeah. And the army is quite powerful, and depends also on how many needles you insert and what the purpose is of your treatment. But yeah, so there's a huge influx of your basically body owned chemicals that are catered to your specific needs, which is not like any other drug you'd be taking, because that will be from the pharmaceutical industry, which is something chemical made in the lab. But these are your own body chemicals catered to your specific needs. So very effective. And so, yeah, so basically you're using your own, you know, pharmaceutical industry.
Your own wisdom. Yeah, you're on the wisdom of your own body, basically.
It's very effective, it's very safe, and it's very powerful. So yeah, it's a very good.
Of course, it doesn't have the side effects of, you know, most of the drugs that we take also affect other things, right? They rarely target just what we need it for, whereas there you're sending your body in. And so did it actually help for the third?
Well, I always make the joke. I'm going to make it. There's also another bigger needle involved there.
Yeah, yes, that's true. That's true. But I dare say you have been trying that bigger needle. Wasn't working. So
there's a lots of different things involved, obviously, with the whole getting pregnant part. But for sure, being able to relax and having your body reset itself absolutely contributes.
So then you became pregnant a lot faster.
Quickly. I was really surprised at really how I was. Yeah. I was like, you know, I was so surprised after like 3 weeks I was pregnant. I came into the room with a big bunch of roses and this Chinese lady looked at me like,
that's me. But isn't it great also that you then took something that you discovered, let's say, well, let's not say per chance, because most of us believe that things do happen for a reason, but that basically you weren't particularly looking for it. You were just looking for a solution to a problem, and that you decided to try acupuncture, and basically was so bowled over yourself by the effect that you then decided to take that further. Okay, so you studied to be an acupuncturist, actually, if we're having about who you are. So you're a mother, you live in Holland, you're over 50?
Oh yeah,
50. You are 51, right, over 50.
Good old, yeah.
Right, okay. And so this is basically, you run a practice, right, in Holland?
Yes, in The Hague.
Mm-hmm. So that's basically what you do. And yeah, and you continue, I imagine it's one of those things that you continue learning as you go along, right?
Yeah, there's so many side alleys. And now I'm also studying psychology, Jungian depth psychology, which is very interesting because, the body, as we spoke about last time a little bit also, you know, is obviously a very big part of where things are happening, but the body is also the sort of the subconscious. And so the body will kind of, you know, if you have things like trauma and so on, the body kind of has internalized some of these things. Let's put this, everything that hasn't been dealt with or hidden traumas or things like that, things that have been dissociated will actually be harbored in the body. Often that's, that's all kind of subconscious. We're not aware of it. And that's maybe why we don't feel great sometimes, because we have like this back.
So it does come out as a physical symptom, let's say, without us having any idea that it's actually related to something more psychological then.
Absolutely. Comes out as a physical symptom, but a lot of it is based on previous experiences and past traumas, etc. Yeah.
So you're going to be linking the psychology in then with the acupuncture in your practice?
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons I was so drawn to acupuncture in the first place, because the Chinese actually recognize that certain organs have certain emotions. So certain organs are linked to certain emotions. I mean, this is kind of a bit double, because the Chinese are not typically emotional people. They're not very outwardly expressive. They're very sort of keeping to themselves, and whereas Westerners are very into, you know, expressionists, you know, emotionless and that. So it's a bit of a strange thing that they're the ones that actually sort of connect those together. And that's where I was very much intrigued. For instance, the heart will stand for joy and excitement, and the liver will stand for anger and upset. And we have also quotes like in Dutch saying, wat heb je op je lever? What do you have on your liver? Meaning like, okay, like get it out. And the lungs will stand for grief or sadness, things like that.
Okay. What about the digestive system?
Well, but it's an interesting thing too, because if you haven't digested literally things, it can also translate back into having stomach problems. And it's a very interesting thing. Yeah, and there are specific people that have written about these connections. One of them is Louisa Hay. She's a lot of people have heard of Louisa Hay. She's really into the connection of the body-mind thing, and been through a lot of trauma herself and became a psychologist, and she really sees those links. But the more I get into this area, and the more I discover that I'm seeing a lot of hidden, you know, correlations. You know, my first experience, and I might have mentioned that in the first podcast, I can't remember exactly, but with this particular thing was when I went to a GP way back in the day. I think I was 20, and I've been having these like cramps in my heart, like really painful, you know, just really like stabbing pains in my heart. And first few days I thought, okay, this will go away, but it just kept on coming back. And I thought, okay, I'm just gonna check this out. And then I remember him being a bit of an older man, a bit Indonesian, and one of the very first questions he asked me is, have you had any, you know, death in the family? Or and I thought, no, but I did break up with my boyfriend at the time. That was very, you know, painful and all this. And so he really was the one that actually linked the two. So like the grieving, the pain in the heart, he linked them together. He said, I think this is because of your grieving, and don't worry about too much, you're a young person, but you know, this could be a reason. So I went back home and I thought, oh, wow. And I realized that that was what it was. It was just grieving. And you can actually literally feel that in your heart. And it's just
So it's not just an expression, heartbreak, right?
No, it's actually something you can put. Yeah, it's fascinating. So that was my first sort of like aha moment where I'm like, yeah, that I'll never forget, you know? So yeah,
yeah.
Made an impression on me.
Hmm. Now we call this talk, how is your qi? What is qi?
Yeah, well, qi can mean many things. Basically, it stands for life energy. It's actually the symbol also is like the burning of, I think it's food or grain or like, and the vapor going up. So it's energy, but energy comes in so many different forms. So it's a very funny question you asked me this, because I really initially got really upset with this qi thing because my kids were saying mommy and her qi and, you know, blah, blah, blah. What is this? So we dove into the literature and I wanted to explain in sort of normal. So I stumbled upon this guy called Chris Kresser. He is an acupuncturist, but he's also a GP and he's a medical doctor. And he has his own functional medical institute in the US nowadays. But he basically went back into history. And we had the very first people back in the day that worked for one of these people, the Dutch botanical guy. And he worked for the East India Company and he was sent to Japan to translate. And he translated also the, I think it's the Huan Di, the famous book of the Yellow Emperor, the big medical, huge Chinese book. The encyclopedia. And he actually translated the word qi as air at the time.
Okay.
And I think that comes very close to the actual translation because I see it as oxygen. Right. And this is also what Chris Kresser says, oxygen. I mean, you can do whatever you like, but if there's no oxygen in your air, then forget it. Oxygen is a really good translation for qi. And oxygen is also super important in acupuncture where, you know, when you put needles in, when you have, you know, the body rebalancing itself, you have the blood flow. And blood flow has everything that we need, specifically oxygen. No blood flow, no life and no regeneration, all this. So oxygen is absolutely key, blood flow. And yeah, oxygenated blood going to the region. So I would, for simple purpose, I would translate qi as oxygen, you know.
As oxygen, indeed. And so it's the question, it's sort of the whole flow, isn't it? So it's having everything, traditional Chinese medicine, isn't that? It's all about flowing, right? That your systems should flow.
Well, yeah, you can see it a little bit as like, again, this is not a good, maybe, well, it's an example, but I mean, what I do to people is when they come here, I ask them, you know, how do you know how acupuncture works a little bit? And they say no usually. So I say it's a bit like, you know, I'm behind the computer, I'm writing an essay, all of a sudden my screen freezes and I don't know what to do. I look again, I try different things, but no, it's still frozen. I think, well, I'm like, okay, oh yeah, no, I can always switch the thing off. So I turn off the off button. This is what the technical guy would say if I would call the company. And then I wait a few minutes and I switch it back on and lo and behold, I'm started again. And so basically all the wiring, all the internal networks are all there, but something is obstructing something. And that's energetic. It can be in one of the organ systems, you know, in your digestive system, you name it, something is obstructed or multiple things are obstructed. Things are not going well. You're having pain, you're having stagnation, God knows what. Same with this essay is frozen. But if you give it a break, if you give it some time to reboot itself, literally, which is what acupuncture does, because it sort of fine tunes the systems together, they start to communicate with each other because they're all doing something. When needles get inserted, everything works together. You can hear the digestive system rumbling. You can hear the heartbeat will change, but you can, you know, the blood flow changes. Everything starts to collaborate together to fix or to see what is the problem. This is why they start working together, these systems. Same with when you switch the computer off. Magically, it all reboots and refines itself because it's there. Like the body has everything you need to keep you healthy and balanced every day. This is what the body's been doing for, you know, 51 years in my case. And yeah, so why would we not trust the body to rebalance itself? If you just
I have no idea where along the process we came to think that we had to see, you know, a doctor and the doctor had to give us drugs. I mean, I know in some countries, you know, if you go to the doctors and you're not given, you know, a page long of antibiotics and all sorts of stuff, you feel, you know, hard done by. You feel that he hasn't done his job. Whereas, I mean, there's so much more that our body can do and which is less invasive for the other parts. So we're talking about many things. So the qi was like our title, you know, that's sort of the whole how it all fits together and this oxygen then flows through. And we've been talking about sort of emotions and organs. What do people do, you know? So does that mean that, you know, if you have a particular symptom, instead of running to have, you know, like for example in your case, these stabbing pains in your heart, you know, you could have thought there's something wrong with your heart, you could have thought you were
yeah,
you know, a heart attack or at least panic attacks or something, you know, which is which didn't seem related with anything that you were going through at that moment. How do we ensure that all of this works optimally?
Well, what I think is very important is that, well, it's what I'm doing here with my work is I bring back a little bit of the trust in the body. I mean, because like the question was as well, like when did it all start? When do we need doctors? Well, you know, it basically started in the 18th century when we started to modernize medicine. You know, instead of looking at the whole body as one, we had our specialists, we had cardiologists, we had dermatologists, and everything started to become specialized, which in one way is wonderful. But at the same time, we're giving it out of our hands, you know, this guy will know everything about this. And this person, oh, I don't know. So, you know, it's almost like we lost a little bit of this control of the faith in ourselves.
In the body itself.
And so, yeah, that's where things started to go bad. But also we had this pharmaceutical industry, of course, that became powerful and all this. And I mean, it's good to have Western medicine, but it's not good to give it all out of hand. And it's specifically not to lose trust in the body, because we're in such a living in your head culture that it goes hand in hand with losing body sort of awareness. And some people just live sort of up here, and there's a body underneath me, but I don't know what's doing. I'm kind of worried about it. I've no control over it. And that's where things sort of get out of hand. And it's really that body awareness that's so important. And also the breath control, breathing is also such an important thing.
What tips would you have for us to become more, let's say indeed, as you say, most of us do live in our head, right? And we rationalize everything, or immediately, you know, we Google it and it says potential heart attack, go and see your doctor or whatsoever, instead of looking at what else could be influencing. And we're talking about, you know, mind-body connection and connecting full stop, right? Is what I'm hearing you say, connecting and trusting the wisdom of our body, so maybe asking it, you know, what tips would you have for us then?
Well, you can talk to your body, you can talk to yourself, you can meditate, you can do whatever it takes, you can read books about body awareness. It's really also a lot about self-observation. So what happens if you're somewhere and you're feeling, I don't know, stuck, or what happens when you feel stress? What happens in your body? Start to feel what's going on. And yeah, these small things really will go a long way. But it's also possible that you have unresolved trauma. I mean, nearly everyone has some form of trauma. And for some person, that can be something small. Some person, that's a huge thing. And trauma is just, it's sometimes expresses itself as, I just don't feel good. I don't know what.
Something's off, right?
Like, I don't feel. And you can't even place it. You don't know what it is. And, you know, because it's such a unconscious thing that you've been wearing for so long. And so if you have things like that, if you're very tired, being very tired also, it often has to do with unresolved trauma. And there's something interesting, because I'm collaborating at the moment with another acupuncturist, and we're doing very well together. She's more the herbalist and I'm more the body worker, and we're both acupuncturists. But we think it's so interesting that there's so much, like, you know, cancer in the uterus, uterine problems, breast cancer, all the female genitalia and things like that. Also because we are still living in a sort of, not exactly female-friendly world. True. Always. And women have not been able to express sometimes their creative emotions, and these areas where those emotions can get stuck. Now, Louisa Hay talks, for instance, but she says that breast cancer is partly, and I mean, don't take this literally, you know, things like, you know, over-mothering or things like that. And I don't know. Of course, there's lots of other reasons, but I find it just interesting to take a very interesting example the other day. I've been treating several people with rheumatoid arthritis, and one of the and lovely clients, this particular client that comes to mind now, but I've noticed that she's a particular personality. She's quite, I can imagine her being difficult in maybe a working environment, very particular and type of a critical person a little bit, but lovely person. I get along very well with. I just did notice that. So I'm reading the Louisa Hay book, and I come across arthritis, and then there's Louisa Hay's explanation of how it's interesting that people that are highly critical often have arthritis. And now, okay, so I read that. I'm not judgmental. I don't think anything. Comes back to my clinic, and she's just met with the rheumatoid specialist, and they were having a meeting with her and her husband, and the specialist at some point says to her, just a quick question, are you the type of critical person? And the husband's going like, what has that got to do with anything? This particular person knows about this as well, clearly. She asked that question. I find it fascinating. And I was finishing that chapter in Louisa Hay, she brings this up, and I'm like, that's too coincidental. That is thing. And I'm not saying, okay, you're critical, you're going to get rheumatoid arthritis. But there is a possibility that there is a link between those two things. I mean, because with everything we do, every thought we think, we also produce body chemicals, you know?
Every thought produces body chemicals.
Every thought, every emotion you have will produce body chemicals, you know? Many, many, many body chemicals. And really, if they're generally happy thoughts, if you're generally in the flow and relaxed, then those will be good for you.
Yeah. You know?
But if they're very negative, the thoughts, and you're also producing unhealthy body chemicals, and they have going into organ systems and at some point leaving.
And that's taking it one step further than saying, you know, obviously if we're being critical or annoyed or angry or whatsoever, you know, we would sort of say it creates stress, and stress is obviously not good for your body. But so that they're literally chemicals that then have an effect.
Oh, yeah, but you know, your body is, well, your, what is it, 73% fluids, your blood contains hundreds and thousands of chemicals. And yeah, so the brain and the adrenals and lymphatic nodes, you name it, a lot of the intestines, they produce more serotonin in the brain, for instance. But the intestines also, if you're fearful or if you're constantly worried or something in the back, your intestines will also excrete different hormones and body chemicals. So you're basically a big soup of body chemicals. And that's why it's so important to think about your, you know, what impact your mind, your brain is having on your health, you know?
So, do you then use psychology always? As in, if a client comes to you and says, indeed, so I've got, arthritis in my elbow, do you then engage in a conversation or do you just sort of trust that the body will know what to do and place the needles there where they need to place?
Well, I always start with like asking many questions and getting a very thorough idea of the person. And then I look at, you know, everyone's different. Some people are much more susceptible to the idea of emotional impact on health. Right. You know, other people are a bit more like, yeah, okay, I want to do this with the medical doctor's advice, or everyone's very different. But if I have a feeling that there's an opening, and if someone really is interested in, I will bring it up, and I will, for instance, advise a book like Louisa Hay's book, or I will advise other books for them to start to look into it, because I noticed that you can make a lot of progress. You can make huge steps by people just going like, oh, wow, you know, I went through this and that trauma back in the day. And, you know, wow, could that have been, you know, could that have contributed to this?
You will also have to resolve that, won't you? Because, I mean, the needles could make your body react to whatever it is and solve that physical symptom at that moment. But if you don't...
I'm treating someone with rheumatoid arthritis, multiple people. One of them, I've actually seen a lot of progress. I mean, the lumps are becoming smaller on her hands, and she's feeling better, and there's significant change.
So that's without going into the psychological part of it, to what is causing that in the first place. That's just letting the body do its physical.
Talk to her about it. I think she's read the book. I think it's also making on a sort of more fundamental level, it's impacting her. So
I didn't mean that acupuncture and all of this didn't matter. I just meant, do you also need to approach, so the physical telling the body, go for it, you know, with the needles, does it also need to be followed with, well, looking at what's causing it? For example, you know, you were talking about being critical, for example, you know, if she doesn't look at that, she's not going to change that. So it's going to come back.
No, but I mentioned it to this particular client because she brought up, and I thought it's quite funny, the coincidence.
Yeah.
But I would never say like, oh, you know, you need to work on this or something. No, and I don't go to that length. And I think that's also a bit too much. But what I will do maybe is like, I will sort of like hint towards it, or I'll see if there's a response from the patient or the client, just like thinking, oh, you know, I see a link, or I see how that could have contributed. So I will just go there a little bit, but I would not say, oh, change his behavior.
So it's just giving, and also I suppose you can ask, you know, if somebody's interested in hearing about that aspect of things, because some people don't, they just don't want.
Like that's not something I should bring up with this particular person, then I will go there. But it really depends on the person, and everyone's looking at it differently. But yeah.
It's so fascinating. But so what should we do? So let's say we have a problem. Okay, my intestines are playing up. They go from one extreme to the other. I'm in the menopause probably, etc. So what would the next step be then, if we take into account all of this, you know, mind-body connection, organs with emotion?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, of course, like make sure that you have a healthy lifestyle. I mean, if your intestines are not well, then, you know, maybe think about what am I eating? Can I change that a little bit? But you can also just, you know, put your hand on your intestines and just massage your intestines sometimes. Right. I have this or that. But yeah, you know, you can just touch yourself. Yeah. That's okay. You know, you can massage yourself and you can like just go there in your mind and imagine how it would be if it was okay. Or, you know, your mind is quite powerful. So you can do that kind of meditation as well. So there's many things you can do. You can read about it.
What was the name of the book by Louisa?
You can heal your life.
You can heal your life. That sounds like a great tip.
Very interesting book by John Sarno called Healing Back Pain. I picked this guy up through another guy, a psychologist in the US, actually a Belgian psychologist. But he mentioned this book, Healing Back Pain, because he used to have chronic back pain. He was an entrepreneur, always working, always stressing, also had a lot of trauma. He hadn't dealt with that trauma yet until he met someone who recommended John Sarno. And it was a psychologist, and he said, okay, pay me 20 euros extra for the book, but and then I don't want to see you afterwards.
Right.
Take care of it. But it's healed his back pain instantly. And I've been recommending it to a few people because I do see this as a regular trend. I do have a lot of males that are in very high positions and a lot of stress that have chronic back problems. Pain. And the back
That's
pain,
fascinating.
You know, it's the bladder channel, the Duke channel, but it stands also for your core, for your... Yeah, like the trunk of a tree, you know, if right. that's constantly under stress, it's going to be achy in a little bit, or if it's bent too much, or for, you know, it's just that core thing. And so, yeah, the stress goes there, you know, it's kind of
this
logical.
Is so fascinating. I mean, it's a totally different world. And I can tell, I mean, you're very well educated in this. And you could probably talk about it for hours on
end. I find it so fascinating.
But especially we are talking about a 50 plus. So we're talking about people, first of all, who probably do start to have a little bit of a better knowledge of themselves, but where there are also, you know, physical things coming up, just, you know, wear and tear or whatsoever. And that instead of always, you know, thinking straight away, medicine, operations, big stuff, that we do learn that. So, okay, I know that, you know, it's hard to ask you for tips as an acupuncturist. You can't say, well, stick a pin in between your two fingers or whatsoever. That might not be a good idea. So what tip, if we're saying, okay, we're looking to live the best lives that we can, so to have that healthy, positive body-mind connection. So, I mean, are the tips that you're saying, what we said at the beginning, as in talk to your body or even ask your body, you know, what's up, you know, where are you hurting? And then I heard you say self-observation. So to maybe notice, you know, what you're feeling.
Your breath, breathing is. I used to, well, years ago, I was in a phase where I was talking, and I sometimes got like this kind of constricting feeling here. And it's like, yeah, you're not taking time to actually express yourself or to breathe. Yeah. And so breathing is important. You can do breath work. I have a friend who does this trauma release work, really, really amazing work in Delft, where people with traumas come there and they do this. It's like a shaking method, but they also do breathing exercise just to kind of control the breath and to get, to release trauma. So,
meditation you mentioned as well as helpful.
Like,
I suppose that's also the idea of stopping and listening. And
Now, just being quiet with yourself is important. And if you don't know what it is, then maybe if you talk to someone, you know, you can go to see a Jungian depth psychologist, or you can, if there's something that, you know, sometimes you just don't know what it is, but it can be hidden trauma. It can be from your youth that you just put away and you dissociated with because it was too painful or too whatever it was, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just causing you this kind of constant, like, unease or, you know, not being.
So it's also to act, right? That's also what I'm hearing you say, is that even if we're not talking about a huge, you know, mega symptom, etc., but indeed a feeling that things are not right, that there's something wrong, to actually act on it, because it might be something that just needs to be released, that just needs to be let go of in order for us to operate.
Yeah.
So again, thank you so much. I mean, I can tell we should be having a lot of these conversations, because each time I see a different aspect of it. Petra, for those in The Hague who would need an acupuncturist, where can you be joined?
Where they can find me, you mean?
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry. I am acupuncture. So I am -acupuncture.com.
Right.
That's where they can find me. I'm also on Treatwell, Atalan 52.
Oh, this cannot be online, I guess, right?
That's true. But I could do a consult over the phone just to get a general idea.
And then
I could do like a 15, 20 minute or half hour talk. I mean, if they feel that would be helpful or something.
Well, exactly. Maybe you could help them, point them in the right direction. I'm just thinking about listeners here who are not physically in The Hague.
Yeah.
Petra, thank you very much for this conversation about organs and
emotions. It's amazing. There's so much out there. So,
Well, thanks for sharing it with us, because it'll be that bit more knowledgeable. Thank you, Petra. Take care. The rest of you out there, don't need to repeat it again. Talk to your body, self-observation, meditation, breathing. And just if something's wrong, have it checked out. And if you're lucky enough to live in The Hague, come and see Peter.
As a last thing to say, I do occasionally hear that, for instance, the, you know, perimenopausal or beginning of menopause can bring feelings of like sort of sadness or of like melancholy or whatever,
right?
You know, feelings of like that, because of the hormonal changes, they have huge impact. So if you have that, it's not even necessarily always trauma, it could be these hormonal changes.
Yeah.
Go and have it checked, because you might need hormone replacement therapy or acupuncture, whatever it takes to get that sort of balanced again, because that can also really make you feel,
and the, you know, if you can do something about it instead of just living in agony to do it. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
For the rest of you, look forward to speaking to you again this time next week.
Thank you for listening. Now it is up to you to make it happen. Join me next week for another dose of empowering vitamins as we navigate the marvelous roller coaster we call life. Subscribe and let me know what you think we should be talking about. Take care out there.